to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that thinking computer, Kyle Krause.
It is, in fact, thinking.
Beep, boom, bing, beep, beep, bum, bum, blah, blah, bing. That's how it went, isn't it?
Maybe, something like that. Yes.
We'll get into what I'm doing in a minute. But for right now, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. It's been quite a hectic week. I haven't even gotten the chance to play around with our new Twitch channel yet, which makes me very sad. But
I've barely had time to do it myself.
Yeah, I have noticed. We've been trying. We want to play with it more, but right now we're just like, everything just like seems to be coming down the pipe at once for us.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours. But now we've had a little bit of success with the Twitch channel. We've had a few great folks come on by, some that are not our regulars on Bumblecast Gaming for patrons. So, yeah, slowly but surely, we're getting there, which is cool.
Excellent. It's great. I'm going to play around with it. I'm going to try to play around with it, hopefully, sometime soon, if I haven't already by the time this goes up. We'll see.
We'll see. Another thing that's coming up is a contest that isn't the Bumble Raffle. Now, those of you who are following me on my Twitter channel, at IanFlynnBKC, know that I had a fair amount of difficulty getting my hands on a pre-ordered copy of the Sonic Mania Collector's Edition. Well, I finally got the sucker, but that was after I had purchased the game because I thought my collector's edition wasn't going to be there. So I now have an extra copy of the PS4 version of Sonic Mania, and we are going to be giving it away on the Bumble King, on the Bumble Kitten.
On the Bumble King cast.
Yes. You know what? We're not even going to cut that. Just roll with it. Anyway, since it is a special, specific prize, we're giving a bit of heads up, and because it is like a full-on new game, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to put together a small trivia challenge, which will be debuting probably Bumblecast episode 52. And whoever answers correctly and whoever gets in there first is going to have the best shot at getting the game. We'll be announcing what those questions are and more details once we have it put together. But right now, boy howdy, you're lucky you're getting this episode on time, guys.
Yeah. We're getting slammed, but we're going to give it away. Give it away now?
Yeah, that's right.
Or later. We're going to give it away later. I don't know. Every time I hear give it away, I think of that. Anyway, never mind.
Another bit of news that came out is if you have been paying attention to the video game scene for the past, I don't know, 30 years, you should have at least heard of the Half-Life series, which was, if you hadn't, a sci-fi first-person shooter that defined the genre in a number of ways, primarily around its very heavy story-driven narrative and its physics engines, which just set the bar for so many others. Half-Life 2 came out, oh god, what is it, 20 years now? 15?
2004.
2000?
Not that far.
Okay, it's 20
years,
a while.
20 years ago was Half-Life 1, Half-Life 2 was like okay. 4, yeah.
And because it took so long between 1 and 2, the idea that they presented at the time was that they would do smaller updates, episodes, to continue the story so you wouldn't have to wait as long. Cue canned laughter. Episodes 1 and 2 came out, and number 2 ended on a huge cliffhanger, and then it went dormant.
Yes.
Nothing. The lead writer for the series left the company, which is Valve. And just last week, released basically the plot synopsis for what would have been Half-Life 2 Episode 3. Now, when he released it, he changed names and genders so that there was no copyright infringement, but it's pretty clear who the characters were and what was supposed to be going on.
Sure.
Have you played the Half-Life series, Kyle?
Yes, I have. I have played all the mainline games. I haven't played the spinoffs from that were the spinoffs of the original game that I didn't play, but I've played 1, 2, and Episode 1 and 2.
Okay. And have you read the plot synopsis?
Of 3? No.
Okay. Then that kind of kills where I was going with this, because I was going to rant and rave about it, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
Oh, well, that's fine. Spoil it for me. Spoil away. I'm not like one of those kids gets up in arms about spoilers, so.
Okay, well, if you're listening to this and you don't want to be spoiled,
yes,
if you're holding out hope that this will somehow come to be and that it hasn't become vaporware at this point, you skip ahead a bit.
Here's a hint. It's not going to become the real thing.
And I won't get into all the nitty gritty because it's out there. If you want to read it yourself, go for it.
Yeah.
But I have three major problems with it. And this is coming from someone who absolutely adores the Half-Life story, warts and all.
Yes. It's a great game, actually. Great story.
Phenomenal. Love it. I think it's aged very well. Mm-hmm. But I have problems with this story. Now, first and foremost, this is taking into account that this is not being applied to an actual game. So during development, I'm sure the story would have been tweaked because game development is a nightmare and everyone who's involved is a masochist. So things would have to be changed along the way.
Sure.
Number two, it was presented from Gordon Freeman's point of view, which immediately loses a lot of insight and nuance in the other characters and their motivations that you would get through the normal gameplay and the way that they tell their story. So there's that lens as well.
Mm-hmm.
And three, it's a synopsis. You know, we're not getting any of the music. We're not getting any of the game's pacing. We're not giving the whole story. We don't see it as the writer envisioned it. So there is a degree of something doesn't quite get across, maybe.
Yeah.
That said, problem number one. The main climax revolves around the ship, the Aurora Borealis, which was a product of Aperture Labs and one of their teleportation experiments.
Mm-hmm.
We see it docked deep underground in Portal 2, which takes place many, 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 many years after Half-Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
In the plot synopsis, the Aurora Borealis is stretched between time, existing both before the Seven Years' War and in the present, and is ultimately turned into a time-traveling missile launched at the Combine. If they blowed up the ship with a quantum bomb, how is it in Portal 2?
There's another one. I don't know.
It's Schrodinger's boat. It's not really blown up unless you look at it.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe there's two of them. I don't know. What am I? What do you think I am? Some kind of, like, story person? I don't know how stories work. I just watch them and read them. Anyway, yes, I understand what you mean. Like, why is this in two places at once? Or three places at once?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Problem number two. At the very end, the G-Man comes to Alex and recruits her, much as he did Gordon, and together they leave for what I would assume to be the story of Half-Life 3. Okay. That's a huge assumption on my part, but the point is, Alex accepts the G-Man's offer and leaves, with Gordon present.
Yes.
I will not accept the idea that Alex would willingly leave Gordon to die. Because at this point, they both realize they're on a suicide mission. They are on the time bomb boat, ready to go smashy-smashy into the Combine. They do not expect to live, and Alex takes the way out. She would not leave Gordon behind.
I don't think so, no, yeah. She's not that kind of character.
Absolutely not. Even if she has taken a very dark turn with the death of her father, she would not leave Gordon behind. That's just wrong.
Right.
Sorry, that's my stance on it. Number three, it made the whole episode trilogy feel very anticlimactic because what Gordon observes is their attack on the Combine will mean nothing. That the Combine itself is so massive, so sprawling, that their ship bomb is barely going to register to them. Now, on the one hand, I can appreciate that because it makes the Combine this huge, terrifying force. They've conquered other worlds. Of course, one attack isn't going to take them down. That would be silly.
Sure.
But to have all of this culminate in nothing feels really hollow. And by the end of it, Gordon is displaced from time. And it sounds like he's given up on the mission. So this would be an easy fix. You know, make it so that the ship bomb blows up a major staging area for the Combine so that it slows them down. Whatever they had planned for Earth is now derailed, or something has happened so that there is maybe a small crack and a bit of hope for the Resistance to finally get some forward momentum. Who knows? But at least give us that sense of all that you've done has culminated in something. Even if it's small, a small victory is all you need. But to have it mean nothing? Just, eh.
Why would it mean nothing? Why even have a game if it means nothing?
Right. So maybe it's the wording of it. Maybe it's the presentation. I don't know. But overall, after at long last, we get some answers, and they turn out to be non-answers and not satisfactory, at least from where I'm sitting.
That's silly. I don't like that.
But, you know, you read it yourself, you form your own opinion, tell me I'm wrong, you know, maybe it'll work for somebody else, but that's my hot take on it.
I'll have to check it out.
But for now, let's check out who the current Bumble Raffle winner is.
Yes, let's get into our Bumble Raffle winner. Wow, this is probably the longest it's ever taken us to get to the Bumble Raffle winner, which is cool. It's fine. Hey, I'm cool with it. We got a mini discussion out of this, I think. But
now, the Bumble Raffle is a contest we hold every show where some random person gets a prize. If you're a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you're automatically entered into every drawing. Otherwise, you need to write into us at bumblecast@yahoo.com to enter into each episode individually. Everyone has the same chance. It's just the patrons get that little perk.
Yep, that's right.
And this show's winner is...
Overthinking Films.
Congratulations, OF. We'll be in contact with you to send you your prize.
Overthinking Films. Overthink about your films? Is that
all the time?
Is that like how you overthink about Half-Life 3? I don't know. Actually, it doesn't seem like you really overthought it. It seemed like it was pretty straightforward. Like, wow, these are some really big problems.
Ship-sized ones.
Yes, yes, indeed.
But talking about thinking, let's move on to something that we know was thinking, debuting back in September 1999. We're a little early for its birthday, but we're talking about the Dreamcast.
The Dreamcast. We're finally doing it. We've been teasing this episode for, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years. How long have we been doing this again?
This is our third season, so about 3 years.
Yeah, almost 3 years. Yep. Or 2 years. I don't know. It's been a long time coming either way. We love the Dreamcast on this show. At least I do.
It is the first console I bought with my own money.
Really? I bought it a few years after its death.
Now, I wanted Sonic Adventure at launch, so I pooled all of my lunch money and all of my chores money for months on end, literally going without some food every day so I could buy this stupid thing. And by launch, I had acquired half of what I needed. So my dad said, you need to have a full lunch. Here, I'll just spot you the other half. Buy your stupid game system.
Thanks, Dad. You're the best dad. Ian's dad is best dad.
He is best dad.
Yes. The Dreamcast, though. Man, Sega's last game system. And it was it's a dang good one. It has aged... I'd say it's aged pretty well, actually.
I would say so, too.
Some of the games are a little rough around the edges, but they were also rough at the time. But there's a lot of classics on it that are well worth playing. Still playing today.
It was the first console that had dedicated online play. Am I not wrong?
It was the first one to have it, one of the first ones at least to have it built in. There were other systems before that had online play capabilities with some add-on hardware, because the Genesis had a few, like Sega Channel was one of them. I think you could play online with that. And I believe there was one for the Super Famicom in Japan where you could play online. But as far as like really kicking off what became online play as we know it today, I think the Dreamcast would be kind of the codifier of that.
It's also the first system with the first console MMO, if not the first true MMO, period. Am I not wrong?
Yeah, Phantasy Star Online is probably... I think EverQuest might have preceded it.
Ah, there we go. But I knew I was forgetting something.
But Phantasy Star Online would definitely be the first console MMO, which was a pretty big deal at the time. A huge deal, even though I never played it. But because I never even had... I've never even got my Dreamcast online. I think by the time I got my Dreamcast, the servers were dead. The servers were down. I got it in like 03, 04. So, and 01 was the end of life for the system. So, but The Dreamcast is a really, honestly, to me, just a fascinating system. Because, in a way, I don't know if you feel this way, Ian, but in a way, to me, it feels like a predecessor to the Xbox.
Ooh, interesting statement.
It's not
Please go on.
It's not a direct predecessor. It's more like a spiritual predecessor, I suppose. But the it's pretty clear what Microsoft were looking at when they designed like the controller for the Xbox. Because it has a very similar diamond-shaped four-button layout with the stick on the with the stick on the left side being above the D-pad on the left side. But basically, the Xbox just went and added the second stick and a couple more buttons while also having the triggers on the back, the same style of analog triggers that would become mainstays on practically every game console now. So the Dreamcast kind of started that, although I guess prior to that would have been the Sega Saturn 3D pad that came with Knights. That also had analog style triggers and a analog stick. But so I think that kind of became the Dreamcast controller. And then Microsoft looked at the Dreamcast and kind of made that controller theirs in a way. It makes sense because Microsoft actually worked with Sega on the Dreamcast, because you'll notice on the front of the Dreamcast, there's a little logo that says Windows CE compatible.
Huh.
And that's, I think that's kind of how Microsoft got involved with games, was due to their involvement with working with Sega on the Dreamcast. So I don't think every game uses Windows CE on Dreamcast, but there are a few that are kind of built on it.
And without a VMU, their controller still managed to be giga huge. So what in the world?
Well, they put two slots in it, and they didn't even put like rumble motors in it. They had to actually add that on, and it's still like enormous.
The VMU was an interesting gimmick, an experiment. Yeah. The Dreamcast itself was a wonderful experiment. The VMU was really nifty, because for you youngins out there who don't know what this is and make me feel really old right now, every controller had a slot that you could plug in, basically a portable memory device that also doubled as a 2-bit handheld game like a Tamagotchi.
Sure.
Which also kind of dates me at this point, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of, I think, inspired by kind of like the Sony Pocket Station. Because Pocket Station came before, or at least like around the same time, I think. Okay. Pocket Station was 99, but Pocket Station is basically like a little LCD screen memory card type thing for the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. So they like came around the same time as the Dreamcast, which is interesting. It's like they were competing for this little, on this little tiny peripheral thing that like hardly got any use outside of the Dreamcast VMU. I don't think anybody really, I never knew anyone who had a Pocket Station.
Now, I will say that I remember the Dreamcast controller for me was very uncomfortable because the cord came out of the bottom.
Oh, it is.
Because they had the plug for the VMU at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And the buttons had these, I guess they were supposed to be kind of like the nubs on your keyboard to tell you where the home row is. But those suckers always dug right into the pad of my thumb, and it made playing for a long time really painful.
I've never had a problem with the buttons like that, I guess because I don't sit there and dig my thumb into them like I'm, like, pushing on a, I don't know. Whatever you're pushing
on. I'm a very
on.
Intense player. My hands hurt usually after a good session.
Okay.
If I squeeze the enjoyment out of the controller, it's all the better.
Is that why the Dreamcast controller is uncomfortable for you? It actually is kind of uncomfortable. I don't like the like enormous ports where the VMU and memory card and rumble pack thing go. I don't like the positioning of those because it kind of cramps up your fingers underneath around the grips on the bottom. But other than that, I think it's okay.
And it's a serviceable controller.
It
but
works.
I've had better.
Sure.
Now, what games did you have for your Dreamcast?
Well, unfortunately, the only games I've ever actually owned outright have been Sonic Adventure and Daytona USA, which probably wouldn't surprise anybody.
Really? You? But Daytona?
But I've played a lot of other ones, like Power Stone.
There we go.
Power Stone's a game. Power Stone's a dang good game.
Not the sequel where they messed it up. The original.
No, the original. Yep.
Which is almost like a early version of Smash Brothers in a way, because you've got these larger than life characters. Everything's very cartoony and bouncy, and it's just really satisfying to play.
Yeah, really fun four-player fighter that's kind of got a like a isometric perspective, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep.
Yeah. And really dang good stuff. That's Capcom, of course, so they're like the masters of the 3D fighting game, and 2D fighting game, for that matter.
And the number of unlockables in it was just ridiculous. You could anything you encounter in the game, you could pretty much unlock.
Yeah.
And play. It just, oh, love that game.
Capcom's arcade fighting game translations on the Dreamcast were mwah, perfect. You had Marvel vs. Capcom 2. You had Super Street Fighter 3. Or just Street Fighter 3. And I think Street Fighter Alpha was also on there. Really dang good ports. That's what the Dreamcast... And that's what Sega's always really done really well in general, has been arcade ports. It's just, I don't know, they're just so good. There's really good ones.
There's, of course, Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2, which established the modern style of Sonic.
Oh, yeah. You can kind of go back to them. I don't know how well they've aged necessarily, but they're still fun to play.
It's fun going back and seeing how much things changed from the original release to the GameCube remakes.
Oh, yeah, the GX version.
Because Ali is more familiar with those, and, you know, what's the stage? Route 101, I think, where Tails is driving along the ridiculous Hot Wheels track highway. And I see it for the first time, like, oh, they added a city in the background. And she goes, what? Yeah, it was pretty much a void before.
Yeah.
Or all the big the cat cameos that got cut later. So sad.
I don't think I ever played Sonic Adventure 2 on the Dreamcast. I only played the remake. But I did play the original Sonic Adventure, and going back to it now, it's very rough around the edges. But,
ooh, but wear gloves.
But... You know, it still has a Sonic charm to it.
And I maintain that original Sonic Adventure's Mystic Ruins Jungle Chao Garden is the best version.
Mm-hmm.
See, and the Dark Garden in original Sonic Adventure 2. I don't like the layouts later on.
I am a heretic and never even dabbled in the Chao Garden stuff in either game.
How could you?
I also never had a VMU for the Dreamcast until this week when I managed to find one, buy one, pick one up. So,
man, I would load my Chao and my VMU, take it to school, and feed it little 2-bit apples all day long. Look at that 2 frames of animation as it walks along, and beep boop, found a treasure chest. Yay, it's an apple.
Good old
beep boop. Hey, it's a scary face. Oh no!
Gotta get your good old Tamagotchi going.
Exactly. I didn't own it, but I played around with Echo, what was the name of this one?
Defender of the Future.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I honestly couldn't get past the starter area because it gave me such a vivid sense of being underwater that I was afraid of drowning.
I haven't played it, but I've seen video footage of it, and as a follow-up to the previous Echo games, it seems like a big disappointment to me.
It's just, really?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to hold up as well, and I was really saddened by that. I was like, wow, this is like some really horrible voice acting. It has great music, though.
Oh, great music, visuals are phenomenal.
Yeah, it still looks pretty good, but it was one of the last games composed by video game music composer master Tim Fallon, who is a legend. So I have to respect it for that, but it was, I don't know, it wasn't super great to me. Now, looking back at it, I suppose. Jet Set Radio, or Jet Grind Radio, whatever you want to call it. That's still a really fun game.
Mm-hmm. Never got a chance to play it.
Oh, really? I would suggest you give it a shot. I think it's floating around out there on, like, I think it's been re-released. It's on PC, 360. All that stuff. Highly recommend it. It's basically kind of like it's a skating game with some, quick time event stuff thrown in. So, you know, push buttons at certain points to paint walls and escape from the police. It's fun. It has a really good, really great style. And it's Splatoon-esque, kind of.
I can see that. I can see that.
It's very, very like Splatoon. I like that. I like that chart. That pie chart that somebody made of Splatoon is basically made up of part Jet Set Radio, part Team Fortress 2, and part Super Mario Sunshine.
Yeah, all right, I'll buy that.
Yeah, it's pretty.
I'll work with that.
It's pretty much it. It has a '90s tude, Jet Set Radio does, which is hilarious because it came out in 2000. So.
Now, the one that everyone has been waiting for me to mention at this point, I'm sure, the game that is so near and dear to my heart, the best thing to ever come out of the medium period. Skies of Arcadia.
Ah, yes. I do not have any experience with Skies of Arcadia, so enlighten me, sir, as to why I should play a multi-sprawling RPG when I have no time to play it. Multi-hour sprawling RPG, I should say.
It's just charming.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything really new story-wise. It's a fairly by-the-numbers JRPG, but it isn't bogged down with the angst that so many of the 90s RPGs did. It's bright, it's colorful, the main character is driven by an indomitable determination. The set pieces are fantastic. Everything is floating islands and flying airships. There's giant monsters, magic crystals, moon people. And once you get past, I would say, the opening fifth of the game, maybe third. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
You basically get free reign on the overworld map. And it's not just fly to destination, land, do things. Most of it is the exploration. You can find things hidden on these floating islands. You bring upgrades to your ships. You can go to new regions or take shortcuts. You find villages that you find hidden geoglyphics. You fight pirates that are flying around out there. It's just so much fun, and it's so charming, and the music is fantastic, and the enemy encounter rate is absolutely abysmal.
I've heard that you should play the GameCube version because of that.
It got to the point where you could hear the disc spin up when it was going to load a random encounter.
Uh-huh.
So you had just enough time, once you learned the timing of it, to open your menu and heal if you needed to, because you would hear the whirr, whirr, and it's like, oh, here they come again.
That's the one thing about the Dreamcast, is it's really freaking loud, that laser. It's like, and it's like, well, that's the sound it's supposed to make, apparently. It's like, man, it sounds like it's grinding itself to pieces.
And in addition to some very basic turn-based combat, you also had ship battles.
Mm-hmm.
And it would basically be this grid where you selected what turn you wanted your attack to land on, and you would do your best to avoid the enemy attacks while also piling on all your damage at once, or save up all your mana so that you can unleash that one super move and just blow the snot out of something until you get to the boss monsters and you need to shoot them repeatedly, because that's the only way you're going to do damage with it. But the point is, you're flying around as a giant battleship with a freaking moon laser on the front, shooting magic cannonballs, and Kyle, oh, it's so good.
I like just listening to you describe games. Can I get you to describe every game? Because it's great. When you're excited about games, it's fun.
And the GameCube version just makes it better because it makes the random battles more manageable.
Uh-huh.
It added additional bosses, additional discoveries, made it even prettier, added a subplot that actually filled in a few plot holes, added in an angsty antagonist that you actually kind of feel sorry for and looked cool, so it's okay, and they didn't shove her down your throat, so it was all right. And, oh, just so much fun.
What are some of your favorite more overlooked games? Games that maybe don't get hugely celebrated on the Dreamcast, like
Skies of Arcadia.
Skies of Arcadia. To me, Skies of Arcadia is like a really big deal amongst Dreamcast circles, at least.
It's a big cult classic, but it isn't really recognized beyond that.
Oh, sure. But I'm thinking stuff like Sega Bass Fishing. It's a good game. I'm serious.
I didn't play it, but what I saw did look really solid. There was a story I saw online. I'm sure it's absolute fabrication, but it was somebody saying they went to a party. There weren't enough controllers to go around, and they were playing, I forget which fighting game, but they plugged in the Sega Bass Pro
controller.
Fishing peripheral.
Yeah.
Which is so awesome. He mapped the various buttons to, you know, the reel and the flick and whatever, and was just destroying people by fishing, flicking, twirling, all this stuff. I want that story to be true because that's just fun.
I love that freaking controller. I don't own it, unfortunately, but it's a, like, it just looks so freaking cool, and the fact that it exists is great. The game itself, Sega Bass Fishing, is a lot of fun. It's a cheesy arcade game. It's ported, like, practically direct from arcade, so it takes, like, 5 minutes to play. It's not very long, but, you know, it's a good time. It's even gotten ported to PC on Steam, so, you know, pick up the Dreamcast collection on there, which is great, by the way. The Dreamcast collection on PC is awesome. Go ahead.
Remember, was Ikaruga like the last one of its official lifetime?
I don't remember if Ikaruga was, but it's pretty close, and I love Ikaruga. I'm glad you brought it up, because it is a glorious shooter that I'm not good at all, but it looks...
I was about to say, I can't play it, but it looks great.
It looks gorgeous. And that's also another one that's been ported to PC, so... You have no excuse not to play, like, most of the great Dreamcast games, because they're out there. They're out there. They've been ported to newer systems. So, yeah, Ikaruga, fantastic.
I think the only one that you can't easily get access to is Power Stone, which the last time I saw was bundled with the sequel and was only on PSP?
Yeah, Power Stone is one of those that's kind of lost. Shenmue 1 is kind of also lost to the Dreamcast. It hasn't been re-released.
But it's getting its third game at long freaking last, so hopefully. Maybe we'll get a triple collection?
I'm hoping. Fingers crossed on that one. I guess we'll see. But
I remember my roommate sophomore year had a Dreamcast, and among many other things, had the British copy of Shenmue 2, which didn't have any voice acting, or English voice acting, but had full English subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm staring at the screen going, why did they not just bring this over? We don't need full English voice acting. Give me the game! But it was his Dreamcast, so I couldn't really play it all that much. He also had some kind of weird ROM disc that had a ton of stuff on it, including the Simon Y Sonic 2 beta dump. I'm like, you have this! Hidden Palace Zone, Wood Zone, Genocide City's all here! And he's like, what? Like, you don't understand what you have.
You don't understand the importance of this. This is the most important thing ever made. And it is. Typing of the Dead.
There we go.
That's a game right there. That is a great use of the Dreamcast keyboard peripheral. And I'm not joking. I actually love Typing of the Dead. It's a remake of House of the Dead, where you have type to shoot enemies instead of actually shooting at them with the light gun. And it's great. It's awesome. And the funniest thing is that they actually went the extra mile to replace the character models, the player character models, where instead of guns, they're carrying around backpacks with keyboards attached to the front of them. So they're like at keyboards in game instead of holding guns.
I did not know that. That's fun.
It is hysterical. Typing of the Dead is absolutely ludicrous. And Typing of the Dead Overkill, the sequel to it, is even better. I think is on PC. It's a newer game. It's not a Dreamcast game, sadly, but I have to mention it because Overkill is also glorious.
We would be remiss to have a Dreamcast episode and not at least mention Seaman.
Mm-hmm. It is a very weird game, but the Dreamcast kind of specialized in weird games.
It did. It was very experimental, which I think is part of why it's remembered so fondly.
Yeah.
And part of why it didn't necessarily take off, because it had so many niche, weird games. Mm-hmm. It was before its time.
It was before its time in almost every way. It was, I don't know, it was just a really great it really laid the groundwork for a lot of stuff that came in the future that I think people didn't necessarily realize at the time would be important. So you got arcade classics, Crazy Taxi.
How could I forget Crazy Taxi?
Yeah, Crazy Taxi, man.
Hey, let's make some crazy money.
I love Crazy Taxi. It's another arcade game. It's great in short bursts. It's a ton of fun. You know, it's kind of a predecessor to open world games in a way. You just drive around and make some crazy money.
Hey.
Samba de Amigo, which I have sadly never played.
That's okay, because the monkey's creepy.
But it looks good. I like the style of Samba de Amigo.
You can have it.
There's also Choo Choo Rocket, which is a really fun puzzle game. That gets insane. There's so many freaking good games. So many good games. And did you know, Ian? By the way, did you know they are still making good games for the Dreamcast?
I do. Primarily because of you. But yes, folks are still developing that beautiful little system.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I really like about it, is that people still care. It's fan games. Well, not fan games. Homebrew games. Indie games. There's a ton of them out there. A lot of them are really good. Let me pull up the list here and pick up some of my favorites. There is a ton of unlicensed Dreamcast games. They are still coming out as of 2017. Think of what. Let's see what I've played here. Pure Solar and the Great Architects, which also came out on the Genesis. That was a Genesis homebrew game as well that came out back in 2010, and it was released on the Dreamcast in 2015. It's like a top-down role-playing game. It's a very, it's pretty straightforward. It's like a JRPG style. That's a really good one. Volgar the Viking, which has also gotten a PC port, and it's available on Steam. That is a really fun platformer that is now being published by Adult Swim Games, but previously was an indie game that got released on the Dreamcast, which I think was its first release, the first system it released on. Stormwind, if you like Ikaruga, you like Stormwind. It's basically a shooter. You got Gunlord, which is a platforming run-and-gun game, kind of like Metal Slug. Really good. Really freaking great. That's a Dreamcast and a Neo Geo game, so it's in good company being on the Neo Geo. Let's see, what else? Dux, or D-U-X, also another scrolling shooter. Really, really, really awesome to play on that. And those are really some of the main ones that I'm going to mention. I haven't played any of the newer stuff that's come out this year, but I would like to try some of them, like Rush Rush Rally Reloaded, which they're finally doing a sequel to the original Rush Rush Rally, which came out back in 2009 for the Dreamcast. There's also a sequel to Dux coming out, which is awesome. And there's a whole bunch of games that have been announced for the Dreamcast that aren't even out yet. So it is a... It's basically the last bastion of homebrew console games. Unofficial homebrew console games, I should say.
Right.
Not like indie, not indie games. Or they are indie games, but not the indie games that you think of today. It's like even the level underneath what we think of as indie games today, I think.
Oh, you're on Steam? How mainstream.
No, I'm on
Dreamcast.
Yes. And also the Bleemcast games are technically considered Dreamcast homebrews. If you want to play PlayStation 1 games on your Dreamcast.
I mean, if you can't, why not?
Sure. If you can. There are better ways of playing them now, but you can.
Well, we could go on like this for another 3 episodes, but we should probably move on.
Yeah.
Now, this part of the show, we would normally use space for an ad. So if you would want to have anything advertised on the Bumblecast, go over to patreon.com/Bumblecast, toss a few dollars our way, we'll promote anything you want. Today's episode, we're talking about my project, Academics Space Crew, which has about 2 weeks left on its Kickstarter. We are only about 38% funded by the time of this recording. We're so close to hitting the 50% mark or getting anywhere. So please, 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 if you don't have the money to spend, which I completely understand, this has been a rough year for everybody, just spread the word. Tell your teachers, tell your friends, get it out there, especially the teachers, because this is a academically aimed project. So please, we just need the attention.
Yeah, go check it out.
And that is at academicssc.com. That's got all the links to the social media, to the Kickstarter, the whole shebang.
Yes. Do it. Check it out. The good news is that a lot of Kickstarter projects tend to get a huge boost of funding toward the end of the project. So I think that's good news for you guys. So yep, my fingers are crossed too.
All right, let's move on to the Q&A.
All right. And with the Q&A, you can ask some questions to us using the email bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleJCRB using the hashtag bumblecast, or on Patreon via comments or messages or however you communicate with us there. I'll see it. Let's get into some priority Q&A from the Patreon guys. This first one comes from our good friend Scruffy Matt.
Howdy, Matt.
After getting some practice at Sonic Mania, I've found that I've gotten reasonably good at grabbing the Chaos Emeralds in that game. My question to both of you is, which Sonic games do you think had the easiest and most difficult special stages? I'm curious as to which games had you screaming and tearing your hair out in frustrations, and which ones you could do in your sleep.
Okay. Easiest ones, I would say Mania, even though I haven't gotten them all yet. It feels more like a lack of skill than frustration. Sonic Rush, because once you learn the teleportation trick, it's a cakewalk. And, oh shoot, I just had one.
I'm trying to remember them all. Some of the newer ones I either don't remember or can't, or never played.
3D Blast wasn't too hard, but it wasn't too fun either.
Yeah, 3D Blast was pretty straightforward, but not great.
Oh, Sonic Rush Adventure. Those were fun. I enjoyed the jet ski levels.
Mm-hmm.
And then Blaze was just hard mode boss fights, but how is that a bad thing?
Sonic 1, the original Sonic, those special stages were kind of frustrating, especially because there's like no reward for getting all of the emeralds.
Mm-hmm.
And after playing Sonic 2 first and finding Supersonic and realizing that there was no Supersonic in Sonic 1 was a true disappointment.
Sonic 2's half pipe could make or break a man.
Yeah.
Especially that last emerald with those rings just floating in the air.
I'm trying to think about which one's harder, Sonic 2 or Sonic 3 and Knuckles' special stages.
I would argue Sonic 2's. Only insofar as Sonic 3, you can always go back and find the warp rings fairly easily.
Yeah.
Sonic 2, you've got to have the rings and go into the stage, and you've got to play from scratch. There's no save file.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sonic 3, you can at least like turn around and go back to get what you missed, too. There's that option. Sonic 2, you can't turn around and go back and get more rings if you don't have enough. You're kind of just screwed out of them.
Right.
And I don't know. Sonic 3's special stages, though, there's just so many of them. I think it just seems like more of a slog to get through them. Because there's so many.
And the Sonic Advance ones are just impossible.
Yeah, I don't like those at all. Knuckles Chaotix. Knuckles Chaotix special stages are, like, really poorly designed, but I kind of like them regardless. I don't know why.
I will agree with you on that.
I don't know why. There's something about them that's like they're terrible, but they're fun at the same time. I don't know how to describe it exactly.
It gives me flashbacks of the training levels from TIE Fighter on the PC.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's like, what is wrong with this level, and why is it actually kind of fun, but also really like slow and not great? It's like they were just
trying to... That's kind of Knuckles Chaotix in a nutshell.
They were just trying to show off the 3D effects of the 32X, which are kind of impressive for the time, but it's still like, And speaking of trying to show off its capabilities for the time, Sonic CD special stages are... they're kind of boring. I don't know. It's like
they
were
trying. It never works for me. I cannot play them to save my life.
It's like they were trying to show off that, hey, we can do things that Super Nintendo can. We got Mode 7 too. And then it was like the only game that ever used it. And it wasn't super great. It was, yeah, the perspective was, it was always, it's always really freaking hard to actually get those UFOs because of the perspective, like jumping, it's like either jumping too late or too early and just missing them because there's not enough visual feedback to be able to determine exactly when you need to jump. And yeah, it's just kind of, you just kind of run around at random. There's no direction or anything. It doesn't give you any direction.
You're just kind of jumping around. You can destroy it in seconds.
Yeah, if you're just flopping around randomly, it's not super great. Those are about the only ones I can think of off the top of my head. We got this next question here. Let's move on to the next one from Sam Cybercat. You guys got any favorite songs from Sonic Mania yet, or is it too soon to say?
Mirage Saloon, Act 2.
Really?
Easy. Easy, easy. I mean, there's a lot of good tracks, but that in particular, just I could listen to it on loop all day, every day.
I need to actually get the game. I've been kind of keeping spoilers to a minimum musically, so I have not played Mirage Saloon yet. I need to do that when I get the game.
I will tell you this. You are going to adore Lava Reef Act 2.
Really? What gives you that idea?
The first little bit's nice, and then there's a new instrument that gets added, and you're just going to melt. Like, I stopped playing for a couple seconds just to go, oh, yeah, it's the good stuff.
What song do they remake for Act 2? Because I prefer Lava Reef Act 1 to Act 2 musically in the original game.
It's more akin to Act 1.
Okay, good.
Like Act 1 is fairly close to the original, and then Act 2 is a more mellow approach, I guess. But there's one aspect that I know you're going to love.
Okay, so they didn't use the same song they used for Hidden Palace for Act 2?
No. You don't get that until a very small segment.
Okay. Excellent. I'm glad to hear that, because as much I do like, and I like the Hidden Palace zone music, but I was really disappointed that they reused it from Lava Reef. Let's see what else. I have heard the Hydro City Zone remakes. Very good. Very, very good. I love Hydro City Zone. It's my favorite zone from Sonic 3, so I'm pleased with it. So I'm going to say that tentatively. And this last priority question comes from Chris A. What was your inspiration to create Dr. Elodie?
Dr. Elodie, and this is probably a better question for Aaliyah, but I'm the one on the mic, so I'll say it. When we were crafting the origin for Nicole, it became a question of, you know, who created her and why. And from there, Dr. Elodie took form. Dr. Elodie is also one of the harder-to-spot joke names. You know, Sonic, he's fast, miles per hour, haha, bunny, rabbit, those are all fairly clear. But, you know, we wanted to have him, give him a name that was electronics related, but not too on the nose.
Sure.
So if you say his name very distinctly, L-E-D.
Okay, clever.
There you go.
Very clever.
And we also didn't want him to be a rehash of Uncle Chuck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Uncle Chuck is this grandfatherly, well, I guess uncle-y, you know, very open, warm person. So with Dr. Elodie to explain why he hasn't shown up in all this time, you know, make him reclusive. Make him kind of a crazy cat lady with all the badniks just stowed away on his little island.
Yeah.
You know, he's been through the ringer. Life has been hard for him, so he just kind of gives up on it. Make him a bit of a curmudgeon.
All right. Let's get into some standard Q&A from the folks over on Twitter or via email. This one comes from FairGuy07. Will we be getting Lost Hedgehog Tales 2.0, meaning your plans if the book wasn't canceled?
Probably, asterisk. There is stuff that is floating around that is making it semi-complicated. And I'm not in a position that I really want to go pushing too hard right now. The whole Sonic comic thing is in flux. So I want to, and I would plan to, but other stuff has to move and settle before I would feel comfortable doing that.
All right. And this next one comes from Fleet Booth Matt. What will be your first custom character you create in Sonic Forces?
First off, well done saying that on the first try.
Which one?
His name.
Fleet Booth Math?
Yeah, okay, so you're showing off now.
I said Fleet Booth Math, so I'm not really showing off the second time.
Oh, I didn't even catch it the first two times. Oh, well.
I said it properly the first time, but the second time I screwed up.
You said what?
You're welcome. I don't know what you're welcome for, but you're welcome. Anyway, go ahead.
I am honestly not sure what I want to start with in Sonic Forces. Somebody asked me this on Twitter earlier, and I'm like, maybe a bear named Scarborough, just so I can say I'm playing a Scarborough bear. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. The bird's triple jump is really nice sounding, and part of me just wants to do a Scourge because that's funny. But I don't know. We'll see what strikes my fancy.
No links, no buy for me.
The cats are... No, they're not. It also depends on how many you can create per an account. Like, if you have to create one per save file, I might think about it harder. If it's more that you can create whatever you want and load it into your current save, then I will just go buck wild. But we'll see.
I might make a wolf. I'm okay with wolves, I suppose. I don't know. I'm not even sure what, like, the different types of custom characters, the different species look like. I haven't looked at them. I haven't looked at that yet. Is there, like, screenshots of them or anything?
There's a few floating around, but they haven't really showcased them too much that I know of.
Okay.
I think it's interesting that the cats and the dogs seem to have a muzzle more reminiscent to Big the Cat.
Really? Both
dogs? With a little bit of that kind of cat lip thing going on.
Huh. Interesting. Well, then. I'll have to check more out later. I just haven't gotten the chance to. And finally, that last question comes from Nolan Pizza Party. Would you date a bee?
This came from an exchange on Twitter where I went a little nuts in explaining what the bee's knees really are. But you know what? If we were compatible, if it was a nice enough bee, sure, why not?
So not Charmy.
I mean, I'm open-minded.
Not Charmy. Nobody wants to date Charmy.
Well, no, despite what the name is.
Yes. Yeah, he's not very charming. He's kind of obnoxious. Anyway, that's it. I wouldn't date a bee.
What a note to end on.
I don't think I could date a bee. It's a little, they're not in my wheelhouse.
Because you know, once it ends, it'll sting.
Yeah, exactly. Once you go bee, you never go free. I don't know. That was the best thing I could think of. It wasn't super great. Anyway, we're done.
If you want to catch up on all I'm doing, head over to BumbleKing.com or find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
Or you can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, and you can find what I'm doing over at KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of this show and many others, including Nitro Game Injection, which is a video game music remix show that streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on 8bitx.com.
And now we are going to go through our ever-growing patron list. You guys are what make the Bumblecast possible. Thank you so much. Here we go. Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, Artendi M., Chris A., Damo, John B., Sam Cybercat, Mike B., Connell T., Samuel P., Justin G., Jennifer R., David C., Revan the Light, Diane W., Lisa M., Today's Passenger, Scruffy Matt, Lee H., James G., Chevelle, Dawn B., Clinton H., almost got away with that one. Sin France, Frogman, Candelicious Cartoons, John M., Eshivardovich 9X, Alex B., James K., Overthinking Films, Adam B., and Ron. Whoo, boy, I'm a little lightheaded.
Congratulations to Overthinking Films for winning the Bumblecast Bumble Raffle. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. Raffle.
we're running on fumes, so we're going to sign out.
Yep.
But don't thanks for coming in, everybody, and we will see you later.
Don't forget to check us out over at twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming throughout the week. We're going to be trying to play more with that. Patreon exclusive streams over at patreon.com/BumbleCast every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern time. And the Bumble store. We keep forgetting to mention that, Ian. shop.spreadshirt.com/bumble store.
So we need to push that more.
Yes. shop.spreadshirt.com/bumble store. You can head on over there and check that out. And what's the coupon?
I think it's expired right now.
Oh, we don't have a coupon.
We don't have a coupon. But when we do, I will make sure to push it again.
Okay. And that's it. That's all the stuff. So,
all right, we're done.
We're done.
Shut it down.
Turn it
shut
off.
Shut it down.
Turn it off now. Turn it off. Shut everything off. Don't. No. Stop. 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 We got credit sign.
Got what?
Credit sign. It's Mystery credit Science. Sign? It's a Mystery Science Theater 3000 reference.
Oh.
They got movie sign. They got commercial sign. They don't have credit sign. That's a new thing I just made up. It was bad. It wasn't good. Because you didn't get it. So I'm sad now.
That's okay.
See if I can remember.
Give it away, give it away, give it away now.
Oh, yeah. You too, huh?
It's been in my head ever since you said it.
You're welcome. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. Available as a pay what you want download.
But I just didn't want to be crass.
Yeah, it's fine. Crass? Do you think I have a problem with crassness?
You're so polite and genteel.
Am I?
Yes.
Are you being?
You're downright cuddly.
Well. I'm
telling Leah you said that.
Okay.
I'm giving her that exact exchange.
Okay, but that's, I don't know, that's not the projection I want to make. I want to be a jerk. I don't want to be a jerk, I'm joking, but I'm not like my father who wants to be a jerk. He's like, I like having stone face. That's my father. He's gotten softer over the years, but he's still kind of a jerk.